The following is a conversation with Harun Ali, a community organizer, an active face of a student politics at the University of Alberta, and politics in general at the City of Edmonton. We talked about the student union, tuition hikes, Gateway, how to run for city council at the age of 17, and much more. It is important to note that this conversation was recorded one day after the initial results of the student union executive election for the 2024-2025 academic year was released. Since then, let's say a lot has happened. Long story short, the chief returning officer at the Office of Election of the Student Union announced that the president-elect has been disqualified. It would not be possible to give the full perspective of what happened and how the situation is in this intro. But a more thorough and detailed conversation on this matter will be available in the next episode. Until then, you can check out the Student Union website for more information. Now, dear friends, this is Emery Alibiglary Podcast, and here is Harun Ali. Okay, you come from the background of an immigrant family, from Somalia. How was the process of your family integrating in Canada's culture? How was you integrating into technically dealing with both cultures as a first gen kid, Canada and Somalia? I'm pretty sure their culture is quite different. Their cultures are quite different. So how was the entire process of that?
Yeah, my dad became the president of the. My dad's been the president of the Canadian, the Edmonton Somali, the Somali Canadian Association of Edmonton for a little while now. I think over like 5 years for sure. I don't know how long, but he's been a very big advocate for the Black community here and for Somali people here too. You know, I mean, whether that be through like the 2015, like the murders of like several young Somali boys. Again, I think that, by having such a strong advocate of a dad, I was able to learn and pick up on a lot of skills. You know, I mean, I got involved when I was 16. But overall, though, I think that that integration was made a lot easier by my dad's involvement in the community. He was heavily involved, you know what I mean? And so even though I was born here in Canada, like I never like yearned for that Somali community because I always had it here in Edmonton. The Edmonton Somali community is a very tight-knit community. While we don't always agree on everything, we are there for one another. And overall, I think that my dad has helped to, there's been several people that have helped to cultivate that, whether that's Dunya Noor, Sharif Haji, or my dad, you know what I mean? There's so many more people that I can attribute to that, but, yeah.
How did it affect your perspective on activism, on politics, on student politics afterwards?
Yeah. A lot of my stance on policing comes from the idea that the way that we have structured police in Canada is not fair. I think that overall that policing in we need to look at value for dollar in policing, and I'm saying that I do not see value in dollar for locking kids up. You know what I mean? If a kid steals a candy bar, you know what I mean, a couple enough times, are we really gonna lock up a kid? Whether that be that, you know what I mean, even though that is theft, I get that, but I'm saying, what is the restorative factor there? Is the restorative factor there really sending a kid and into that life? I don't think so. I think that there are a lot of things that the law criminalizes, again, that stem from poverty, that stem from these equity issues. You know, I mean, I grew up in public housing. In 2014, my dad and my mother, they bought their first home in the south side of Edmonton. And like I've seen the difference in school and quality, whether that be living right next to like my school being right next to my public housing unit, or compared to, you know what I mean, a more affluent neighborhood. So again, you know what I mean, I think that a lot of things overall like influence my activism, but I think identity and I think seeing the struggles that my parents went through, you know what I mean, did also influence my economic ideas, you know what I mean, whether that be through. I would say emerge, like whether that be through, you know what I mean, like a universal basic income where people are able to get the life essentials, you know what I mean? When I ran for city council, I also advocated for public housing to be far more accessible for Edmontonians. And I think that a lot of these things, and food, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's ridiculous that we lock people up for stealing food and life's essentials. I find it absolutely ridiculous, especially in an economy where we have Galen Weston, you know what I mean, jacking prices up every single few days. You know what I mean? It just seems like folks can't catch a break. I don't know if you've been experiencing it, Ali. I mean, I'm here, but what was it called? It's been tough out there. Yeah.
Yeah. These days, U of A's campus food bank comes handy for a lot of the students. Okay. You've been, if I'm not mistaken, you have been the counselor of the Student Union of University of Alberta for two terms. Okay. And also ran for presidential election for two times.
Yeah.
How is overall student politics different from actual politics? What are the dynamics there? How different is the frustrating part of that?
I remember when I ran for president the first time. I remember walking into the...
Bring this one. See, this one. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's good.
I remember when I ran for the student union president the first time. I'd come out of the city council race. I wanted to run for student union president because I see value in a union. I see value in student unions. However, I think that they vastly, vastly undermine their own capabilities by not effectively mobilizing students. You know what I mean? Whether that be through 20% election turnout, you know what I mean? Like, if I was the Minister of Advanced Education and I was trying to shove through a bunch of tuition increases and a bunch of students came to my office and said, hey, students elected us and we have a mandate to be here to talk about tuition increases, and I look on the SU website and I see they were elected with 20%, I'm going to ask, I don't think your issue is with me, folks. I think your issue is with your students. There is a clear distrust with students and the Students' Union. And there's not been an effort from student union candidates to really address this. So when I ran the first time, I said that I effectively said the same thing I said the second time in a more refined way, I would say. But the first time around, the general gist was, we're a union, not a business. And I just remember seeing the amount of like criticism that I got from like everyone, like whether like it was just like, it was insane to me because I was saying something that, like, again, I did not think was that controversial. I was saying that we just need to do more effective advocacy, and that means too, we also need to redirect our focus. I'm saying that, again, are we a corporation? If we're not a corporation, if we're a union, then we need to invest into union activities. Union activities mean mobilizing the campus. You know what I mean? When the student union president walks into Bill Flanagan's office, he should be able to say, hey, these are how many students voted for me. Your students are paying attention to what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, we have over 35,000 undergraduate students. You know what I mean? We should be having more than 5,000 people voting in our student union elections.
That's actually one of the problems I wanted to touch on. Number one is that the majority of the students enrolled in any post-secondary institution don't care about student politics. They're not involved at all. They're just there to get an education, learn something, and just leave.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, the amount of attention that the university's board and the university's governance technically gives to the student union becomes quite different rather than a strong body. And, okay, I wanted to talk to you about your campaign slogan for the second time. It's a union, not a business. Even a union, it needs money. So it has to have an influx of money. And that's called a business. so So how do you differentiate these from each other? Because, like, I have a hard time accepting that slogan, you know?
Mm-hmm. I knew a lot of folks had a hard time. You know, I mean, I'm sure Levi Plowman did too. But overall, here's the thing. It is a union. It is not a business. A union's activities at the core mission need to be mobilization. And I'm saying the way that you do that, again, is through charging people like membership dues. We charge students membership dues. And I'm saying we do not want, to be frank, I don't know what this is, corporate socialism. We do not, I don't want to be subsidizing a failing bar. Like, why are students subsidizing bars on campus that are clearly not financially in a well position? I'm sorry, a lot of students don't want to go to Dewey's and RAT. Again, I'm not advocating for these places to be closed, but I'm saying that if we know this, we need to adjust our budgets to reflect that. And I'm saying that, again, you know, I mean, the other thing here, too, is that does a student union need to run these many businesses? And I'm saying, what is the value that students are getting? I think the value, again, I think that students haven't seen a deduction in their student union fees. If anything, actually, they've seen an increase since 2019 with the, I believe, with the sustainability and capital fund fee, which, to be frank, was, in my opinion, the Meyer Horowitz Theater using that money, again, in my opinion, is questionable. I think that...
What did they do with the money?
I mean that the sustainability and green, like, and capital fund, I think that it was posed to students as a sustainability effort where they were going to get money for projects and that type of stuff. And again, like, while, like they did say that it might be used for capital stuff, it seems like the primary goal has been to use it for capital stuff, and it seems like it was greenwashed.
Could you please specify what you mean by capital stuff?
It's called the Sustainability and Capital Fund.
Okay.
What was it called? The Sustainability and Capital Fund was a passed through referendum, by the Students' Union. So it's just a fee that students pay into, and it's just like a, it's a fee. It's basically a pool of money that the Students' Union can draw. There's a Sustainability and Capital Fund Committee. Mm-hmm. They give out grants each semester, I think 4 times a year. I think one's coming up actually in May, so if anyone's watching. I don't know how much the amount they give out is, but overall I'm saying that most of the funds, from my understanding, were used towards the Meyer Horowitz Theater project. And I'm saying that, again, you know, I mean, like, students had rejected this multiple times before as it had been posed under different different names. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but if you look through the gateway, this is not the first. The Sustainability and Capital Fund was not the Students' Union first attempt at getting students to vote in favor of the BioHorrors renovation.
Mm-hmm. I see. Another challenge specifically to student politics, let's talk about our situation at Student Union, is that the team is only there for only 1 year. Mm-hmm. And in some circumstances, one of the existing executives either gets reelected or gets elected as the president. And as a result, they are more familiar with the system, with the network that the Student Union has across Canada. And the pace of their activities and their advocacies will be increased. However, in most scenarios, that doesn't happen. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. So there is a period in which you have to get transitioned, and then you have to get introduced to all of these important people, whether it's the Prime Minister of Education or the city mayor or something. And all of these take time. And all of these guarantee whether Student Union will be successful or not in that year. And it's a high but there's a possibility that the Student Union wouldn't be successful, and as a result the businesses assure the presence of the Student Union for that year. At least the alternative presence of funds, and technically power to advocate for students, whether it has to be a campaign for tuition hikes or any other thing. So I think in the bigger picture, when you think about it, presence of those businesses assure the Student Union's active presence for students in the long term. But I do agree with you that it's capitalizing a lot of money over the short term and not providing a lot of values. Does that make sense?
Yeah. My perspective there is that I was told that this was a student union. I was not told that this was a student company. So I don't want to, I'm sorry. Like, again, you know, you mean, I want them to do their jobs. I mean, Levi Flamin has been working throughout this year to optimize the student union budget and everything. And I'm sure that, again, we'll see some savings throughout those budgets. Because, again, I know that Levi is very, very well versed in that. But overall, though, I'm saying that if they're not going to pass off these cost savings to students, and they're not going to do, to be like, tangibly speaking, there was some advocacy done, but I'm saying that there were some massive overlaps this year, and I'm saying that we should not be opening new businesses until we can get back into focus on a union. The reason why I went with a union, not a business, was it was supposed to catch people's attention. It was designed, it was designed in that nature because we wanted people to start talking about the fact that this is a union and to debate the fact that this is a business. In my opinion, I don't think it's a business. And again, I think a majority of campus may not agree with me. And to be frank, that's okay. But overall, though, I think that more and more people, again, like, I think it's just about paving the way for new people to continue talking about that. You know what I mean? The same way that similar elections have happened before with Bashir and Marina Bannister, you know what I mean? That old and new guard, sometimes, you know what I mean? People disagree. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Things happen. But overall, though, I'm saying that if the students' union wants to be a union, I'm saying that they need to forego some of their business activities in favor of being an actual union. And they need to actually, like, they need to make that separation a lot more clear. The businesses are not the core of the students' union. The businesses support the students' union mission. But overall, though, I also don't see the need for us to, you know what I mean? I think that projects like the Maya Horror, like, renovation, you know what I mean? Like, the theater, again, like, I wonder how much more potential that we could have for the Students' Union if we really just honed in on advocacy. That's what students want. Students do not feel like the Students' Union is an effective advocacy body. And I'm saying, as a union, that should be concerning. I think that that is absolutely concerning. The other thing here we have to realize is that Danielle Smith and her legislation, Danielle Smith as United Conservative Party, I am pretty sure that they have passed something about voluntary student unions in one of their political policies. You know what I mean? So again, like, these situations are being observed. So, you know what I mean? Growing student anger towards executives that, to be frank, have maybe lost touch with what students want, coupled with a UCP that's willing to do that, may have dire consequences for the students' union. They need to listen to students, and I think that, again, you know, I mean, I think that the election results that we saw last night are a reflection of that anger. You know what I mean? Not in all races, not in one race, but you know what I mean? I think that in other races, you know what I mean? I think especially in the president's race, you know what I mean? That we were seeing, I'm very happy to see that we have a woman, a female president representing the Students' Union in the next term, but also a candidate that is so unapologetically, that has stood up for human rights, whether that be on Palestine, whether that be for the Sexual Assault Center, you know what I mean? And we'll continue to fight for students. And I think that we will see a marked difference, whether that be with Abdul Abbasi, with Renson, with all, like, I think they have set up, like, an excellent team there. Who's the vice president? I mentioned four people, right?
Yeah, well, you mentioned VP External, yeah. VPSL president, VPA is Layla, and VP Finance is still Levi, so
I see. Yeah. Fair. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go deeper on the student union tangent. You had two presidential elections, which none of them had any success, unfortunately. What did they teach you? Because I'm pretty sure they have a lot of lessons, and it's a magnificent experience to have all the heartbreaking. You learned a lot of things. So what were the lessons?
I am not an excellent communicator. I am someone that whenever someone throws me a ball, I'll take it, you know what I mean? And I'm pretty quick to swing that bat, you know what I mean? And send it off without really, you know what I mean? Sometimes, and that is something I'm working on, like taking that time to reflect. And I think that first time I ran for president very clearly reflected that. Both times I ran for president, the platforms, the core of them were very, very similar. It's just the messaging was different. And I think that, like, you know what I mean? Like, that continued development has occurred. And I think that I've seen, like, I remember in January of 2023 when I started the Loblaws advocacy, I took a lot of lessons I learned from the Students' Union. You know what I mean? I learned that ambiguous statements can lead you into trouble. And that making sure that you're clearly, like, what was it called? Making sure that you clearly lay out the facts is incredibly important. And that semantics aren't as important. And then while you can argue semantics, you can argue, you can argue arbitrary rules, you know what I mean, and things that, to be frank, don't really make sense. No, sorry, you can't argue things that don't make sense. But again, like, my point being that I think it taught me to argue in good faith. And I think that because I remember feeling, seeing the other side of being, you know what I mean, of dealing with things in bad faith from other people dealing with me in bad faith because of rumors, you know what I mean? Overall, I think that it also taught me to value myself as a person. Both times I ran because, again, like, I thought that things were dire. I remember the second time I ran for president, I ran because a lot of those things were very personal to me. The residence part was personal to me because I lived on residence. I paid that $15,000, I think, to stay at Lister, and that did financially hurt me significantly. And I know that hurts a lot of students. But students do deserve to have that experience. You know, I mean, living on campus is an incredible experience. And if you can, I do encourage you to do it. I made lifelong friends, and yeah. And I think that they helped, those lifelong friends actually, I think they helped me to see that there are other things beyond the Students' Union to do in the world. And I think that I'm continuing to do that.
Can I ask a personal question? Mm-hmm. It's hard to have lost the election and go back home at like 10 p.m. at night on the night that the results are out. You've been on the pinnacle of, let's say, your popularity over, let's say, 2 or 3 years, because all the campaigning you have done for about 2 weeks. You have a lot of assignments to do because of all of the campaigning that you did and midterms to do. And you're a student at the end of the day, and all the other problems that people face. And on top of that, you have lost the election that you have so emotionally invested. So how was the process of getting over that?
It was very quick, actually. And the same thing for the city council and the same thing for any election, to be honest. A thing that I think about here is that I like to see progress. I like to think of it as us moving the goalpost forward. So, you know what I mean? Whether that's a point, whether that's, you know what I mean, like 0.01, like any progress I see, I'm ecstatic about. I think that, you know, I mean, I believe that I increased the number of votes I got the second time around. Well, not by much. I think that overall, you know what I mean, that I knew that the execution of the ideas was, like, again, like, I don't think I clearly stated to students what exactly I wanted to do. I think, again, I left a lot of things up to ambiguity and to assumptions. And again, you know what I mean? Like, I remember the Gateway article, some of the Gateway articles about the first time around, saying that when I said that I wanted us to mobilize, and I remember seeing, I don't know who, but someone saying that in the Gateway article that they wish I had mentioned, like, sit-ins, you know what I mean? They wish I had mentioned, like, radical actions like tuition strikes. These are all things I believe in. And I, as they mentioned, you know what I mean? And, like, I would never be opposed to them. And I think that we should do them. I think that, like, I think what Akanksha and other executive, not Akanksha, I think it was Marina Bannister, maybe. You know what I mean? Going to David Turpin's office, following him after tuition town hall, you know what I mean? I really think that we need to show Bill Flanagan that students cannot afford this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as much as again, you know what I mean? I've been hearing a lot of different things around the tuition hikes, and I was concerned about those. And that was what I wanted to see progress on those topics. I wanted to see tuition not increase. I wanted us to build a cross campus coalition of people, not just here, but also across the country as well. You know what I mean? Students' unions to say enough's enough. You know what I mean? Like, students are at a breaking point. People are using campus food banks to eat. You know, and people are choosing between textbooks and the cost of living. It's not fair to students, you know what I mean? And again, especially not to international students. I think that, again, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even begin to imagine the struggles of being an international student at this current moment with a government that continues to demonize them for a housing crisis that they did not cause, while at the same time, too, struggling to find housing because the government refuses to build housing. I couldn't imagine the frustration there, you know what I mean? It's like talking out of both sides of your mouth. Yeah, but
you're touching on a lot of points, man. You went through all the things I wanted to ask you. Okay, let's take a step back. My last question about the student union is that after two times running for presidential elections, I'm sure you've also ran two campaigns for your for the terms you ran for the council. What's the process of first starting to think about a platform because you want to run for a position, let's say president. Mm-hmm. So can you give a crash course for running for the student union president campaign, starting from writing your platform, consulting with student bodies, whether it's student representative associations, clubs, or higher, lower groups. And overall, the entire process of starting to the end, which is the election night, the results night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What was it called? So, first thing is you need to decide to run. You know what I mean? That's a big decision. I remember the first time around, I was pretty confident about it. I had decided in December I was going to run. Mm. The second time around, I was much more hesitant. I remember being in Calgary, actually, with my friends. We were on a trip on reading week, and I was just sitting there thinking about it. You know what I mean? And I was like, I knew that the election was going to be unopposed if I didn't run. And I was like, Haroon, I think you're gonna regret this if you don't present your ideas again. You know what I mean? And I thought to myself, we had improved the community. I had improved my communication. You know what I mean? And at that point, you know what I mean, that I was working on a national campaign to see to see greedflation come to an end in Canada. And we were seeing success. You know what I mean? I think at the time we had like 70,000 signatures. You know what I mean? Our public battle there had been working, and I was thinking to myself that, okay, let's see. I threw my name in there. Once you throw your name in, though, the second thing that then comes up is the platform and consultations that come there. I wish on the second time around that I had consulted with the ISU. I should have. That was my failure, and I acknowledge that.
To make sure it's clear, Indigenous Student Union.
Indigenous Students Union, okay. Yeah. What was it called? Once you're done with that, and once all that's been, once all those consultations are done, the thing here is that you're going to see varying different opinions from across campus. And this is where candidates come in. Is you need to think to yourself, what do you want to see? What is your vision? But also taking into fact the consultations that you have done, the pieces of advice, the all the words of wisdom and everything that student leaders have passed down to you in collaboration with building that platform that represents who you are as a person. The first time in there, I did it a little too much. I represented myself a little too much as a progressive. Again, you know what I mean? And student union elections, you do have to be nonpartisan. So once that's done, once you have a platform all ready to go, you can start working on social media, graphics, you can put, you can also, before doing that campaign platform, you do need to get together a team, pull together some of your friends, And then start on the platform. Once the platform's done, start on the social media strategy again. Seeing me elections are getting a lot more creative and a lot more. Again, I think that a minor shout out. I think the $550 limit in student union elections, to be frank, is ridiculous. I remember
should
when
be higher?
It should be far higher. I remember when I ran for city council, we spent I think almost $30,000, and we had I think over 500 donors. You know, I mean, I'm actually pretty sure we broke the record for the amount of small one-time small donors that we had for any city council election. And we hammered that home. And I remember spending that much money to campaign to about 60,000 constituents, coming to the Students' Union and being told, you got $550, bud. I was like my hands, like, again, you know, I mean, that $550 limit only serves current executives who are have the name recognition, who are able to then, you know, I mean, capitalize off of that. Again, you know, I mean, if you could, like, let's say the limit was 1,000. Honestly, for the presidential race, I think that the limit should even be a bit higher at 1,500. Again, I know that this is coming out of student pockets, but the students' union's pockets. However, you know, I mean, I would recommend that they don't spend $120,000 on dodgeball next time, and that might not hurt so much.
I love them. Minor criticisms across explanation. It's nice. I like it. Okay, and then you start your campaigning, and how is the process of, because I'm sure you also need to give class talks, mm-hmm. and you also need to manage your life as a student. Mm-hmm. So how's that?
Both times I ran for president, and I'm sure a lot of candidates can attest to this, my social life, my student life, out the window. I don't think I went to classes either time. I actually remember the first time I ran, I think it was only one class, so I don't think it was too bad. I was taking a much more relaxed, like, I was coming back, I was recovering from that campaign. That city council campaign was a very long one, so I took some time off from school just to focus on myself. And I think that was an excellent decision for me. And
great, that's lovely. Let's talk about city council. At age 17, you ran for city council. That's how am I supposed to call it? Okay, the PG-13 version would be quite ambitious. okay, what was the reason you ran for it? What mm-hmm. made you confident mm-hmm. In your decision, in your network of support, and mm-hmm. in the plans you had?
I remember sitting at the Remedy Cafe, actually, in Twilliger, and I remember doing a lot of consultations there. And I think it was before the pandemic. I think it was actually potentially in 2019. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was probably in 2019, actually. Yeah, it was in 2019, actually, because of the provincial election. What was it called? I was meeting with some folks, and I was talking, and I was starting to get everything together for the campaign idea. I remember the first platform that we had, you know what I mean? Again, it does reflect the business community. Like, again, you know what I mean? Like, you can't take everything, and this is, like, a lesson even for student union candidates as well. You can't take everything from consultations and throw it into a platform and make it a make-a-wish list. You do have to add that personal characteristic of who you are, what you believe in as a person, because people deserve to know that, whether that's students, whether that's a general public, they deserve to know what you believe, not just what not just what a bunch of groups believe, but what you as a candidate believe, because that will influence how you react to things. Once we put that together, we were off, and it was an intriguing journey. There are lots of hurdles along the way. I turned 18 halfway through. I remember there were concerns about if I could register and if I couldn't, because I was 17. By not letting me register, it wouldn't have allowed me to collect donations starting January 1st. So we registered, I believe, on January 3rd. January 3rd, 2021.
That's a very specific paperwork headache, man.
It was something.
And you said you got about, okay, did you say you had about 500 donations, like sponsors?
We had a lot of individual, like, we had a lot of small-time donors. Wow. The small-time donor.
How was the process of finding all of that circle? Like, how long did that take? Because if that's the decision, it has to be made, like, at least a year in advance.
So what I actually did was I just did something very unconventional. I just went to Twitter and I just started DMing people. I DM'd my followers and I just said, hey, you know what? I'm running for city council. Do you think you chip in $5? A lot of people chipped in, you know what I mean? Like, I think our total spend was something like 50, like, I mean, like, I think our average, oh, sorry, our average donation, just sorry, I'm just doing some rough, it was 27,000, I believe, and we had about 500, let's say, about $54. It was a very low, like, total spend compared, average donation per donor. You know, I mean, we did have some large contributors, and I'm very, very thankful for them for contributing to the campaign. But so I'm so sorry. I did also lose track of your question.
It's okay. Don't worry. My question was, how long? Now I lost my question. my question was how much time did you have to put for planning before actually deciding on, like, how. What was the time, length of the time that you planned this entire campaign?
From 2019, I planned it also in 2020 a bit. I talked to some people, and in 2021, I think that's when it really took off. Mm. Oh, actually, I remember. See, in 2020, in the beginning, it was in. I met with my friend in February, actually, and that's when we started doing consultations. Having conversations about what we wanted to include. And I remember being just a 16-year-old at the time, I believe.
In 2020?
Yeah, 2020. And this is like winter 2020. And then we switched online for, what was it called? It was before the pandemic it was before they declared it a public health pandemic. Okay. It was like sometime in February, early February, mm-hmm. I believe, the first few days. And yeah, so it took a little while. I believe it took a year. But overall, a lot of things, again, you know what I mean? I think a lot of the ideas that I have and a lot of my like thoughts come in the moment. Like a lot of the things I tweet, like my friend and I will be discussing something and I'll be thinking about something. And then later on that night, they'll see a tweet, something about something to do with that, you know what I mean? In an aspect. A lot of what I do is not very calculated. There's this assumption that I'm some very, like, what was it called? Very well-organized individual. I am not very, very well-organized. I have ADHD. What was it called? As you can see probably by this interview, it is a bit all over the place. I touched on various different topics. So, yeah, and I think that reflected in my campaign, and that reflects in my advocacy too, you know what I mean? There are good things and bad things, you know what I mean? The good things are is that I think it brings genuine enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. I am genuinely enthused, you know what I mean? Like, I am genuinely supportive of a lot of things, and I think that overall, I think that my enthusiasm has stayed the same high, even though, you know what I mean, we have had some disappointing wins, whether that be on a provincial level and with federal polling, how it's looking. next election may be an intriguing one.
It's going to be fun. Yes. At least for you. Who's interested in politics? Okay, we talked about a very crucial role in student journalism on campus. They're one of the oldest, if not the oldest, one of the oldest student newspapers in Western Canada. How do you think they contribute to campus discourse? And how do you think they affect overall the flow of student politics on campus?
Without the gateway, I would be very, very intrigued to see turnout. I think you would fall substantially, and I think that at 10%, I think you start losing it, like an argument with the government. That, you know, I wouldn't run in an election where the turnout was on average 10%. I think that, again, that's an abysmal mandate from students. I think that, again, that just shows the distrust that students have in the system or a general apathy. It is on the students' union to make a case to students that there is value in their students' union. And whether that be through education, whether that be through outreach campaigns, that's why I liked Hakeem Bonney's campaign so much this time around, was we do need to do more outreach as a union. And that was what I meant too when I said a union, not a business, is that we just generally speaking need to do more outreach. But overall, you know what I mean? I think the Gateway's role is incredibly valuable. I think they add significant value to campus, and I think that their fee should have passed the last time. I remember running for city council. I commented on it, actually. I said that I'm disappointed that their fee failed, and I'm very happy, you know what I mean, their fee passed, you know what I mean, to the haters of the Gateway. 60%, yes!
How do you think they... Because it's a, okay, you are a group of students who are responsible to keep a student body, which is being student union, accountable. Mm-hmm. However, you have to go through their channel as the regulating body of the university, of the student manners technically, to get your campaign approved, to get the, technically, the decision that you want to implement a program in which students are charged for your services. Gateway charging students, I think it's $1.5 every semester for each student, for each undergraduate student, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong. So how do you think, because as a result, this group now has to get the approval of the student union, in which, whether they like it or not, Gateway has to keep them accountable. So there is a challenging dynamic between
there is a challenging dynamic, you're right.
Yeah, I just don't remember the words. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Can I ask my question again? No. Sorry. This is not me, I swear to God.
Did you hear the no though? Right? Did you hear the no though? I'm flying with you, yeah.
Okay, there is a challenging dynamic between the Gateway as the body of, as the student group that is supposed to keep the student union accountable, and the student union when Gateway is trying to run in the elections as a group in which is intending to charge the students a price for their services. So, how do you think, as a student leader, as a person who has been involved with student politics for a while, how do you think Gateway can manage this relationship of still keeping a student's union accountable, however, not in a manner that does not negatively affect their relationship with the student union as the body who has the authority over approving Gateway's campaign?
In my perspective, I don't think this is really on the Gateway. I think that's on the students union to have checks and balances to prevent situations where unfair election habits are done because executives were held accountable. Again, I think that the Gateway, I'm looking forward to a lot more pieces next year, especially as the Gateway is able to hire more staffers. I think that they've done like an excellent job this year, and I think that, you know what I mean, like a round of applause to Katie and her entire team. I think that they have done phenomenal work there, and I think that they continue to do phenomenal work for students. And while it is a challenging dynamic for them to navigate, I think that they have navigated it excellently, and I think the executives haven't done anything in that case. I think that I'm pretty sure they also, I think they actually even waived the DFU, I think they waived some requirements to make it a little bit more easier. A lot of those requirements in bylaw, I think the bylaw, like regarding plebiscites and referendums overall, and I also said this to the Indigenous Students Union president last night, I said that I don't think we should be putting these basic human rights back up for votes every 4 years. Mm-hmm. I think that there's certain fees, and I think that the Gateway should also be enshrined there too. I think that campus journalism is incredibly vastly important, and I'm saying that they cannot do an effective job of holding the Students Union accountable. The part that the Students Union holds the Gateway accountable is on financial transparency, and I'm saying that I sat on audit committee. I don't think I haven't heard anything. I'm sure some haters of the Gateway might assume that they're hiding things, but I don't think so. But overall, I think that they've done an excellent job, and I think that they need to just continue what they're doing now and I think students are going to continue to see value in the Gateway. But I think that enshrining that in bylaw I think is an excellent idea, not just for the Gateway, but for the Landing, for the Indigenous Students Union, for the International Student Association as well, because international students do deserve representation on campus. And, you know, I mean, a 1.7 difference between, like, I'm pretty sure the ISAF actually last night got 13.3%, and they needed to get to 15%. That 1.7, in my opinion, it just hurts. And I know the international students did want representation, but again, without knowing the numbers, it makes it so much harder on what, to be frank, is a lot of international students that are working, again, multiple jobs, that are wearing multiple different hats, you know what I mean, in the community, that are trying to, like, that are juggling a social life, that are juggling a private life, because let's be honest here, we all don't, I can't remember the last time I had a moment to, like, stop, breathe, and relax, you know what I mean? This past week, it's been stress. But I know that a lot of students are feeling that, especially with midterms coming up. So, yeah.
You brought up international students. So I want to talk to you about the international student cap that is provided by, not provided, but technically enforced by the government of Canada to limit the number of students who are enrolled in any provinces of Canada in post-secondary education institutions. In post-secondary institutions, what's your opinion on that? How do you think that will affect U of A and the broader Edmonton area?
So from my knowledge, the U of A will still, I'm pretty sure, we're actually due to see an increase in number of students that we'll see next year and, like, under this new cap. My overall view, though, is that to punish international students for a housing crisis, to be frank, that Canada was heading to long before they came here, I think is just downright absurd. I think that international students, again, like, I'm happy that they're providing more, like, realistic of what Canada is to international students, because I also don't think it's fair to tell folks, you know what I mean, that, like, Canada's a great place, you know what I mean, you'll get a job, you know what I mean, you'll find a place that's affordable and all that, and you come here, you, especially if you're in Toronto or in Edmonton, you know what I mean, and you see the rents, you see the conditions, you know what I mean. Like, I know some of my friends who are currently living in apartments that have been, like, one-bedroom apartments that have been split into three units, and I know a lot of international students are living in sometimes, like, sketchy housing conditions, and again, that's not through any fault of their own, that is through government failure. So why are we punishing students? And to be frank, students are already disadvantaged, they're already more likely to be disadvantaged than domestic students, and are already paying an exorbitant amount of money. Why are we charging them? Why are we now saying that? Why are we changing the focus and putting the blame on them? And it also, again, you know what I mean, it doesn't help with Canada's problem, with Canada's, like, rising similar to the United States, the idea of fear of immigrants, you know what I mean? And we're seeing this, like, language, you know what I mean, like, around, like, the demonizing language around immigration, you know what I mean, come to fruition, whether that be with Joe Biden last night at the State of the Union, calling, suggesting that immigrants were illegal. No human being is illegal, you know what I mean? Overall, I think that this is just shows, you know what I mean, a disturbing trend, and I think that this is slowly entering into Canadian politics. And I think that we need to be very, very careful about the rhetoric that we're using to describe situations, you know what I mean? And I don't think that is being applied by the government. And I think that they are directly targeting international students for something that is completely outside of their fault.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about is the tuition increases. First of all, to give some context, with the provincial budget cuts, the university's hands are tight, and as a result of that, they have to increase the tuition. Now, there are two tuition models, specifically in University of Alberta. One of them is the domestic students, which is regardless of what year you're enrolled at, there is a certain tuition you have to pay that might increase every year. Mm-hmm. The catch here is that there is a cap in which the university can increase the tuition, mm-hmm. which is 2% for for domestic students. The difference between that and the tuition model with international students is that international students have a guaranteed tuition model, which is in the span of the 4 years of your degree, you will be guaranteed a certain tuition that you have to pay. It will not increase. Mm-hmm. However, the next generation that comes, let's say class 2025 or class 2026, that one might increase. And there is no cap on it. There is no regulation, whether it's provincial or federal, on it at all. So my concern is that we are already having the tuition hikes. We are already having massive increases. And the important point to remember here is that there is a cap in which the university can charge the MSU students. So what my fear is that we're going to max out on the tuition of international students for the next couple of years at the University of Alberta. And as a result of that, we're going to see massive, massive differences, massive impacts on the diversity of the students from the backgrounds that they attend at the university. So what do you think?
So I think there's like three questions there. My views on the domestic cap, the international cap, and how they relate. So for the domestic cap, again, like, I'm happy that they capped it for domestic students. I also think that they should have done the exact same thing for international students. I was disappointed that they didn't. I think that, again, I think that international students pay a ridiculous amount. I think that it's become to the point where you could put a nice down payment on a house, you know what I mean? And again, you know what I mean? I love every single time people tell me that the university's budget is tight, because it doesn't seem too tight, you know what I mean, not to afford Bill Flanagan's exorbitant trips around the world. I've been seeing him jet-setting across the country. I would love if the Gateway or if anyone could figure out how many carbon emissions he's emitted. So free suggestion there, but and also if they could figure out, like, apparently, like, I saw somewhere that he spent $70,000 on meals and dining. So if you could also figure out what type of filet mignon or champagne he was sipping on, that'd be very, very, I think, very, very relevant for the student body. But overall, this university has the money. I think that the university can position itself better. I think that the university can also make a case to the government. I think this is not a case just for students to make. This is not a case just for the student union to make. This is a case for the university to make as well. The university needs to stand up for its students. Because I said this at General Faculty's Council. This is nothing. This is a bunch of buildings with a bunch of professors. And no without the students, research can't be done. There's no learning going on. Like, what is happening? Like, peer tutoring? you know what I mean? The campus, like we are everything. Like, we students are in a very good position to position themselves, as we are the main driver of this campus. So again, you know what I mean? Like, we need to go back to administration and lay out very clearly that, hey, we shouldn't be fighting each other. This is not a battle between the students' union and the university. This is a battle between the students' union, the university, versus the government of Alberta. And the government of Canada on campus St. John funding and other initiatives as well that they have done across the country. So again, for the domestic cap, while I'm happy, I think international students also deserve to see that cap. And again, I do think that that fear you mentioned there is very, very real, that international students will be subsidizing the deficiency in between government funding and between the university's operational needs. You know what I mean? So it is unfortunate. I think that, again, you know what I mean? I think that we need a strong, and that's, again, you know what I mean, why it's important to have the, like, ISA around, have the Students' Union executive team focused on advocacy, not business. And I'll hammer you on that throughout this interview. But because, like, this is something they should have been focusing on. This is a case, that, again, you know what I mean? The international model for education, I mean, the tuition model for international students, where they get a guaranteed tuition, again, is very, very nice. But I'm also saying it also needs to provide some leeway for students. For example, I'm pretty sure that if you change faculties, you know what I mean, you do end up getting, throughout that 4 year, the guaranteed tuition, you do have to go get a brand new one, you know what I mean? If you take longer, you've become subjected not to those same fees, but to whatever the fee at the current rate is. Yeah. Again, which could be, you know what I mean, like, let's be frank here, if they're increasing tuition about 7%, that's going
to be a massive difference. It will be
that will be a hefty price. You know what I mean?
A lot of students are actually having that problem, especially the ones who have been enrolled in at the University of Alberta before this tuition model was introduced, and now are taking a fifth year or a fourth year, or a sixth year. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a lot of headache. Yeah, back to you though. You were explaining something.
Yeah, I remember when I started university, someone told me university could be the worst 4 years of your life or the best 6 years. So, Bill Flanagan, I think international students deserve to have the same opportunity to take 6 years without paying an exorbitant amount to fund your filet mignons and champagne across the world. Again, you know what I mean? Like, overall, like, I get that the university's hands may appear to be tied, but I'm also saying it's also tone deaf for the university to be like, hey, folks, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do. It's just Danielle Smith. you know what I mean? But hey, in the interim, we're going to ship on that champagne and that filet. We're gonna maximize that dollar. I don't think that's in good faith. I don't think that's a good faith argument. And again, you know what I mean? And I know that there may be, like, I know that not everybody agrees with Bill Flanagan's approach, but overall, as a president of the university, I do not think he's taken enough opportunity to protect international students. These are, to be frank with him, like, his only, like, reliable money source. The provincial government will cut funding repeatedly, you know what I mean, with little disregard for the university. But international students are, like, unfortunately forced into a guaranteed tuition model. So again, like, I don't understand his non-focus on international issues, you know what I mean, like the issues that matter to international students, whether that be, and like, I'm happy to see it was a marked difference in Ukraine than with the Palestinian students. However, you know what I mean, that, like, all of these issues are interwoven. Trust is broken, mm-hmm. whether that be trust, the student's trust in the university administration, or with the student union and with with that executive team. I think trust is the theme here that we're noticing. Is that, like, is there a lot of trust that students have, and do students believe that things can get better?
Okay, thanks, man. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. I know this is a very busy time, especially for you. So this was a great interview. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you very much, everyone, for being with us at with the Zones Up podcast. You can find us everywhere on Spotify, YouTube, Castbox, everywhere technically. And thanks for having us. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.